The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And all right, Duff's laying another one on us. Is it going to be an egg or a golden goose? Let's see what Duff McKagan comes up with on the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan here. How you doing? I'm just done watching, I downloaded the Queen movie off sort of a dodgy website. I think it was filmed right there in the theater, you know, from a camera. Because I see a little silhouette of a man. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah, not one of his best, not one of his worst. But listen, I love it. Every single joke that Duff calls in is a gem. He hasn't missed calling in a joke of the week yet since we started in August of 2017. Not even when he was in the Philippines with Guns N' Roses or on vacation with his family. He still calls them in like clockwork. And even though GNR are taking a break from the road right now, Duff is still busy. He's got a solo album coming out later on this year, working on that with Shooter Jennings. The lyrical content is based on the Guns N' Roses tour, the reunion. I'm sure he'll do more with his other band, Walking Papers and Loaded, featuring former Fozzy bass player Jeff Rouse. Walking Papers just released their second album late last year. Plenty of stuff coming from Duff, including more jokes of the week for 2019. And speaking of 2019, hopefully it's going to be an even better year than 2018, which was monumental in so many ways, not just for the career of Chris Jericho and the formation of AEW, which you can hear all about from the Wednesday's show, but also 2018, huge movies, great bands coming out with material, awesome TV shows. We lost a lot of very formidable, influential brothers and sisters. And we're going to talk all about 2018 with the Fab Three, the return of Charlie Benanti from Anthrax, and Mike Portnoy from the Neil Morris band, the Winery Dogs, every single band ever. We had a great time talking about 2017 last year. So as soon as the clock struck 12 and we hit 2018, I called the boys up and we're going to do a whole review of the year 2018, our favorite movies, our favorite TV shows, the favorite albums that came out, and of course talking about the people that have gone on their way. So many cool things, so many laughs. 2018 was a good one, and we're going to go all through it, talk all about it right here on Talk is Jericho with the Fab Three, starting now. All right, so we're back here with the Fab Three, Charlie Benanti and Mike Portnoy. And last year, we had the 2017 year in review, and it was a huge success, huge hit. So we're going to reprise that this year for the review of 2018. How was your year, guys? How was your year, Mike?
It was a pretty busy year. I was on the road most of the year, but no shortage of good music, film, and TVs to keep me entertained. So it was a good year for me and for entertainment in general.
And I think you spent a lot of time on the road, too, this year as well, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. It was a very busy year for us, and it's been nonstop since 1987.
That's the funny thing, though. I was saying to you guys before, especially in Anthrax's case, because we did a lot of touring as well, and all of us are road dogs. But it seems like, I think our tour was 19 months, but your tour, Charlie, on this record's been like over 2 years.
Yeah, same with the Worship Music album. I mean, it just never stopped. And you know, when you you can't stop, you have to go, you know, because once they stop asking, that's when you kind of scratch your head and go, how come we're not doing this? How come we're not doing that? So got to keep going.
And especially with the Slayer connection, because it seemed like as soon as Slayer announced their tour, you were like their, you know, their favorite opening band.
You know, knowing those guys for so long, I'm glad that we were a part of this whole thing. And we're extending it. We'll be together in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, you know, and then in Europe for the summer.
That's great.
What about you, Mike? Who are you touring with mostly this past year? Because you've got quite a few projects, as always.
Most of 2018 was Sons of Apollo for me. We started in February, and we went till October, and then we had to stop in October because Jeff jumped onto the Trans-Siberian Orchestra tour. So we pretty much toured the whole year. And it's funny because now here I am today, literally working on the second album. I just had to leave Derek and Bumblefoot in the basement to come up and do this phone call. But Derek and Bumblefoot are downstairs right now, and the three of us are now working on the second album. So no rest for the wicked.
How was that kind of putting together? Because obviously it's a prog rock super group with, like you mentioned, Bumble and Derek Sherinian, who was in Dream Theater, and Jeff Scott Soto and Billy Sheehan. Even though it's quote unquote a new band, it pretty much is a super group. And it seemed like you guys did some pretty good numbers right off the bat.
We did okay. I mean, to be honest, you know, it was a slow build. We had to really build it up. And it's a little frustrating. And I've been dealing with that for years now, you know, the last 8 years or whatever, since I left Dream Theater. Every time I start something new, it takes a while to get it off the ground. You would think with the five of our names, it would be built in and good to go. But no, you know, people may know our five individual names, but they don't know the name Sons of Apollo or the name,
right?
Well, the Winery Dogs or, you know, Flying Colors. So each and every time you have to kind of start from scratch and find your audience. But, you know, that being said, it was a great starting point and a great year. And we filmed a live DVD in Bulgaria, where we did a whole cover set and we played with an orchestra and the choir. So, you know, we're going to put that out as a live album this year. And I think that'll be a really good representation of the first year of this band.
Yeah, like you said, man, starting from scratch is never easy. But I saw a lot of stuff. You guys had some good vibes and some good tunes and just crazy shredding as we would expect it. So I think that's going to be it's going to build quite well for you guys.
Awesome.
Okay. So we're talking 2018, and I know Portnoy is the king of lists. So I actually did a little homework and wrote some lists of my own, and we'll base this around the movies, music, and TV. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the brothers and sisters that have passed. What would you want to start with, Mike, since I know that you're always kind of up to date on everything?
I don't know. Pick it. Music, film, or TV. I mean, I did my list. I do a list every year, and I put it out right before the new year. So, I mean,
let's start with movies. Let's go with the movies. What was your favorite movies of the year, Mike? You start.
I'll pick a couple off the top. I think the top of my list is this film called Mandy, which was absolutely mind-blowing. Nicolas Cage is in it, so on the surface, people might think it's just some campy Nicolas Cage film. But if you dig deeper, the director that made this film, his name is I don't even remember the name. This is only his second film. He made a film in 2010 called Beyond the Black Rainbow, which blew my mind. And I've been waiting for a follow-up for the last 8 years, and he finally comes out with Mandy. And it's kind of like if you took a cult film like Evil Dead, but if it was directed by Stanley Kubrick, because it's visually absolutely stunning and psychedelic and it's incredible. And it's violent and it's beautiful and it's just a head trip, a psychedelic mind trip for 2 hours. So to me, that was my favorite film of the year. But then there were a few other things that were a little more mainstream. Like I loved Isle of Dogs, Wes Anderson.
Let's hold on for a second. So the guy's name is Panos Cosmatos is the director.
There you go, exactly.
Did you see that, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. I saw it a couple months ago when I was in L.A. My friend Rohan said, you got to check out this movie. And I saw it and it was just like, it reminded me of The Hills Have Eyes meets the Cenobites meets, you know, some weird. It was just trippy and
totally trippy.
And like Nicolas Cage, like I didn't know. As I'm watching this movie, all I kept thinking of was, why did he do this movie? Like,
the bigger question is, why did this movie have Nicolas Cage? Without Nicolas Cage, it could have been seen like a Kubrick mindfuck. But then you throw Nicolas Cage in, and it adds this whole other level of, like, you know, cheese, a cheese factor.
Well, that's the mindfuck, though, Mike, that they added Nicolas Cage in it.
Yeah, and the T-shirts that she wore, it was just trippy to me.
And it opens with the opening scene has a King Crimson song. You know, it opens with Starless by King Crimson. So right out of the gates, I was like, oh, man, I love this movie.
That's awesome.
You know, it's interesting when you get those type of movies, because like you mentioned, Nicolas Cage is one of those guys. He either has like an amazing performance or it's just like the Wicker Man with the bees. No, not the bees.
But this is like this. He goes so over the top. But like his greatest film ever, I think.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie is like he's covered in blood and he's driving. And then he kind of looks over to the passenger seats and he just has this look on his face and his eyes are bugging out. And it's just
that's the closing shot. That's actually the closing shot of the movie. It's insane.
It's
but even
crazy.
Like the scenes where he's just covered in blood and just drinking a full bottle of whiskey, like in one take, like one shot and destroying the room. It was just, but all of it is done so intensely. You know, there's a few scenes in the movie where he's like given his wife is given a dose of LSD before they kill her. So it's like really psychedelic and trippy and well made. And I don't know. I loved it. I was floored by it. I immediately saw it a couple times back to back.
I have not seen it yet. It's fun. That's why I like doing these shows, because I forget that was something that I'd heard about and wanted to check out. So I'll have to check it out next.
The only thing missing from the movie is the Barry Manilow song.
Yeah, totally.
That would be
better. They totally could have used that.
What else you got, Mike?
I loved The House That Jack Built, which is Lars von Trier's latest film. And Lars von Trier is one of my favorite foreign film directors. He's from Denmark, and he did Breaking the Waves and Dancer in the Dark and Melancholia. Anyway, this is his latest. It's with Matt Dillon playing a serial killer. And the whole movie is basically him just revisiting five of his favorite kills.
And
Uma Thurman's in it, and a few other people of note. But it's really, you know, it's kind of like Quentin Tarantino meets, Lars von Trier. You know, it's really, really weird and well done, though.
Charlie, what did you see?
I didn't see that, but it's on my list.
What movies did you see that you liked?
I'm going to go a little mainstream and just say that I really loved the Han Solo movie.
Wow. You know, that's something I wanted to bring up on here, because that was really controversial when it came out. It was like the first Star Wars movie that lost money.
It lost me, too.
Yeah.
I think it lost people, too, because of the movie that came before it, which was that last Star Wars movie that was, to me, is a big piece of shit. So I think a lot of the true fans are like, you know what? This franchise, I'm not going. And I think they boycotted it, but then now they're starting to see it and they realize that it wasn't a bad movie at all, you know?
I think the problem was it came out too quickly after was it The Last Jedi? Yeah, is it?
Yep.
They're pretty much gonna do
every year at this point now.
Well, they were doing it just every Christmas, and then they doubled up and said we'll do Christmas and summer, and I think that bit them in the ass.
But they took it all for granted. And I think you really have to pace these movies out and make people want to see these movies. Mm. But I think Solo, I think it hurt the whole thing, because I didn't think it was a bad movie.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think another thing that kind of was a little bit of a downer as far as from a box office standpoint is Solo wasn't somebody that we had necessarily heard of. I hadn't heard of the actor before. And one of the things is people were talking about Chris Pratt was going to be talked about doing it. I thought that might be kind of cool. But when he didn't get it and you replaced him with someone that I didn't really know, I think that kind of hurt a bit.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But I usually like unknowns. Like when the first Star Wars came out, you didn't really know these actors.
That's
that
true.
Well.
That's true. Did you guys see how about A Quiet Place?
I just watched it a few nights ago, actually.
Did you see that, Charlie?
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought it was pretty good. I thought the idea of it was, anytime you get one of those performances of an actor who can't really speak and just has to emote, I thought they did a really good job with that. And the fact that John Krasinski actually wrote and directed it as well was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was totally surprised by that too. But I thought it was really well paced and it was really suspenseful. Which people are comparing this other piece of shit movie called The Bird Box to that movie. I don't know if you've seen this.
Yeah, I saw Bird Box first, actually.
What a piece of crap, dude.
Now let's talk about that for me, because to me it was like, okay, what can we do? Quiet Place, you can't talk. So Bird Box, you can't look.
Right.
And everyone's talking.
Bird shit.
Bird Box of shit.
So, I didn't hate it that bad. I thought it was all right. I don't know.
There's
maybe
no, there's
so
no
much
payoff
about it now.
there was no payoff. And like,
yeah, I had issues with The Quiet Place, actually, because they were, I liked it. It was well made, but there were moments where it's like, all right, why would you get pregnant in this situation? And then, and then, like, knowing that you're going to go into labor and be screaming, and then a baby's going to come out crying. But okay, if you got pregnant and you can't do an abortion, why would you leave the wife at home when you take the son to show him the waterfall? They discover that this waterfall is a place where you can go and you could scream and not get, like, caught. So why wouldn't they bring the fucking wife there? They'd leave to the, go to the waterfall and leave the wife back at home to go in labor. There was stuff like that that was making me crazy when I was watching it.
That's a great point.
I thought the same thing. I thought exactly the same thing.
Like, bring the whole family to the waterfall.
And then every time I do that, when I watch a movie, someone says to me, well, it wouldn't be the movie if you had that happen. You know?
Yeah. I don't like that plottal stuff. Now, why do you think Bird Box is a piece of shit, Charlie? Because everyone thinks it's the biggest thing right now.
Oh, I don't think it's good at all. I think there was no payoff at the end, and I just didn't dig it. That's all.
Well, the payoff at the end, I thought it was actually kind of cool because they actually found a place that was. It reminded me of like The Walking Dead from years and years ago when they were looking for Terminus, and they get to Terminus and they end up getting almost eaten and killed. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, they found a sanctuary where you can go. And actually live and live safely. I thought it was a happy ending.
And be blind.
Well, yeah. Well,
the thing to me that the whole thing was kind of cool. Having a blindfold on, okay, I get it. But the whole thing on the river, there is no way you could do that. You know what I mean? At one point, you would take the damn blindfold off, and like you just would do it. There is no way you could ride down a rapid filled river with two little kids. And not take that blindfold off. I mean, I'm sorry. I just don't think any of us could really do that.
Yeah.
So, how about a couple more of the mainstream ones? Not usually a superhero fan, but I really enjoyed Aquaman. I thought that was a really good movie. Did you guys see that?
Not me. I haven't seen a single superhero or Marvel film like ever. So that's just
it's not
my
really
thing.
A thing. Charlie?
No. I like Aquaman with blonde hair.
But they had to have the sex music.
Entourage. Like, that was the original.
Yeah, exactly. Where, Vinny Chase.
I was looking for Vinny Chase in this movie, exactly. And he wasn't there.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I used to love Aquaman. He was my favorite superhero. And other kids laughed at me for it. And they were like, why? I said, why would you laugh? They said, what's his big deal with his superpowers? Like, he can control the ocean. I'm like, okay, well, take Batman. A mile out in the ocean, drop him in the middle of the ocean, and what's he going to do? He's going to wish he could call a whale to come pick him up and take him back to shore. So that superpower isn't so bad when you're actually out there. And then look what happens now. This movie's super popular, and everyone's eating their words. He's the coolest guy.
Actually, you look more like Aquaman than the guy they got playing.
That should be it. How about A Star Is Born? You guys see A Star Is Born?
I liked it. I actually really I thought it was really surprisingly good. And I didn't expect to like it. I thought Lady Gaga was awesome. I thought Bradley Cooper was awesome. I thought the songs were awesome. I was surprisingly I surprisingly enjoyed it.
Me too. I got caught up in it and just enjoyed the movie. It's like, wow, I haven't seen this type of movie in a long time.
Yeah. And I'll say this, and I wanted to pick your guys' brains on this. I actually liked it better than Bohemian Rhapsody, and I'm curious your thoughts on Bohemian Rhapsody.
Let me just mention Star Is Born quickly. Two things about it. One, if you've ever watched the Kris Kristofferson one with Barbara Streisand from the 70s, that guy's death, spoiler alert, sorry if you haven't seen it, that death was much more heroic to me.
It was a motorcycle accident,
yeah,
right?
He doesn't. The fact that he killed himself in this one, I thought it was really lame, you know, I just didn't like that. I would rather he got on his motorcycle and drove drunk off a cliff or whatever the hell happened. I just thought that kind of
That scene of him, the scene of him in the garage, though, with the dog outside the garage while he was killing us, that got me. I must admit I got teary eyed during that scene.
Where he's eating the steak. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was intense.
It was interesting too. I read that Bradley Cooper based his voice cadence on Eddie Vedder. And when you watch it with that in mind, he totally sounds like Eddie Vedder, walks like Eddie Vedder for sure. Bohemian Rhapsody?
I'll start by saying I loved it. I was totally entertained, and I thought it was a great film, and I'm glad that it's doing as well as it is. But as a Queen fanatic, and I know you guys are as well, the inconsistencies and the chronological errors and the things like them breaking up before Live Aid, which didn't happen, or Freddie Mercury finding out that he had AIDS before Live Aid, which didn't happen. All those things made me a little crazy. It was very distracting. So for me, yes, it took away from the film. But I could see where somebody that doesn't know that stuff would just love every moment of the film.
Right. I had issues with the continuity. I just had a lot of issues with that stuff. And then I again thought to myself, okay, wait a minute. This is a 2-hour movie. They have to condense everything they possibly could into this. And the scene where Brian May is teaching them, "We Will Rock You," and Freddie already has a mustache and short hair. And I'm like, no.
It's in the 80s. They state before that scene that it's in the 80s. And that song obviously came out in 77.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the scene with them on their first American tour, and they're playing Fat Bottom Girls, which wasn't it wasn't until their 7th album.
The thing is, though, Mike, and you just said it. I mean, we're Queen fanatics. So we don't know, but I took my wife and kids to that movie, and now we're going to go see Queen this summer with Adam Lambert. My kids love Queen now. So I think it's one of those things. We get it. We understand why they had to do it that way.
I'm surprised, though, because knowing that Brian and Roger were involved with the movie, as well as Freddie's original wife and his boyfriend, the fact that they were all involved with the film, it shocks me that they would, like, that Brian and Roger would sit settle for a scene that's showing them broken up, whereas they were actually touring for the works,
of course,
for 8 months leading up to Live Aid. But yet in the film, they completely changed history and made it look like they broke up and they were pissed at Freddie for his solo album, when that did not happen at all. So I'm just shocked that Brian and Roger would like let history be rewritten like that.
Do you think maybe
it was a question of they did speak up about it and then they got shot down by Hollywood, you know, that type of thing?
I would bet that it's one of those things. They sat them down at the beginning and said, listen, guys, because you know all the tumultuous stories about when they were trying to make the movie with Sacha Baron Cohen, and he wanted to make it more of a Excalibur dystopian, you know, Freddie just off his rocker. Where I think they probably sat them down and said, listen, we're going to have to make some concessions to make this a better movie and a more concise movie. And probably overall, they went with it. Because even to me, like the one that got me the most, because I agree with you on all those ones, but the one that got me, and this is super obscure, this is like when me and Mike were watching McCartney live at Shea Stadium from like 2002, and one of the water bottles was on its side on the amp, and Mike couldn't stop looking at the water bottle lying on its side. You remember that, Mike?
Yeah.
It's like, why is that water bottle on the side? The one that got me was the Live Aid performance, which is picture perfect, even down to the Coke cups, Pepsi cups on the piano.
Pepsi. Yeah.
But Roger Taylor has the hair from like 1978. I couldn't, but like, if you're going to go to that much detail for that scene, why not give him the, you know, the 80s pompadour fluffy thing that he had? I couldn't believe that one. Drove me nuts.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know, overall, they just won the Golden Globe for Best Picture. And the thing to Rami Malek, oh my goodness, like, dude, I never once thought of him as an actor. Like, he was Freddie all across the board.
Yeah, he was amazing. And the guy who played Brian was unbelievable, too.
Yeah, and the guy who played John Deacon. When has there ever been a John Deacon lookalike ever?
You know that he was in Jurassic Park. He was the kid in Jurassic Park.
Was he?
Wow.
No kidding.
In the first Jurassic Park.
Wow. I had no idea. That's a good trivia note there, Charlie. We got tons more movies to talk about, tons more cameos and former child stars that play the nondescript bassists in rock movies. And we've also got a list of TV shows and music to talk about as well. But for the record, if you're keeping track at home, Charlie hated Bird Box on Netflix, and I hated the Han Solo movie, which Charlie really liked. And Mike loved A Star Is Born. But you know what I love? I love Steven Singer, and I might be the only one because every jeweler in the world hates Steven Singer, but I got to love him and his company because they've got me covered for Valentine's Day with the most unique gift I've ever gotten my wife, Jessica, a gold-dipped red rose. That's not a joke, man. It's a real rose that's been dipped in 24-karat gold. What a unique and awesome gift, and it's only available from Steven Singer's Jewelers, okay? I love Steven Singer. Even though every other jeweler in the country hates him, the gold-dipped roses are awesome, and they come in lots of other colors as well. It's a great gift for your wife. girlfriend, mom, grandmother, or even your mother-in-law. Okay, I'm going to post a picture of this gold-dipped rose on the Talk to Jericho Twitter, so you can see it for yourself. And these roses start at just $59. Okay, no joke, no gimmick. $59 is the price for a gold-tipped rose, unique, only one like it in the world. You'll even get your own personalized love note and Steven Singer's signature gift box and free shipping. All of that starting at $59 and free shipping. And clearly, these roses dipped in 24-karat gold will last forever. They're not going to wither or die. The petals are not going to start falling off. It's not going to end up in the garbage, just like your love. It's going to live forever. These flowers don't even need water, okay? So I want you to go to IHateStevenSinger.com now and order for Valentine's Day. And you might say, why are they calling it IHateStevenSinger.com? Well, here's the reason why. 20 years ago, a gentleman purchased a gorgeous diamond engagement ring from Steven Singer Jewelers in Philly, proposed to his girlfriend. She loved it so much, she said, yes, I'll marry you. But she would have to wait 2 decades and have 2 grown children before he would surprise her again with a diamond ring, beautiful one, to celebrate the 20th wedding anniversary. She was so excited by the ring, she gave her husband more than a thank you. I'm talking a little hibbity-dibbity. And exactly 9 months later, the couple came to the store to tell Steven about their brand new baby boy. The wife proclaimed, I love you, Steven Singer. And the husband responded, here we go again. We're up all night with feedings and diaper changes. I hate Steven Singer. Hence, IHateStevenSinger.com. You're not going to hate Steven Singer if you pick up one of these gold roses, something that your wife can only get from Steven Singer. I guarantee she's never had it before. Mother, mother-in-law, grandmama, girlfriend, whatever it may be. Go to IHateStevenSinger.com, spelt just like it sounds, IHateStevenSinger.com, IHateStevenSinger.com, Steven Singer Jewelers, one place, one price. This is a gift she's going to cherish forever. Go to IHateStevenSinger.com and join the hatred. There's tons of other movies we could talk about, but let's move over, unless there's anything else you got. Well, how about, let's mention quickly Bandersnatch, which was insane, how that movie... It's basically a choose your own adventure, but in a movie. It's
like a video game and a TV show in one.
Yeah, in the Black Mirror franchise, which you turned me on last year to at this time, Mike. So, yeah, you can watch it and something will happen where it says, you know, A, do you get up and leave the room, or B, do you beat up your father? And you pick one of those two things, and then that's what happens in the movie. And it seems to me that you could watch this hundreds of different ways and hundreds of different times. And I know, Mike, how...
Well, I've already watched it 3 times and had completely different movies each time. It's crazy. I mean, people can have Bandersnatch parties for years, come together and, you know, drinking parties or whatever, where you just get together and watch a different film each time. It's groundbreaking. Whether you like it or didn't like it, you can't deny that this is going to change the way films and TV shows are made in the future. And I wouldn't doubt if 5 to 10 years from now, you know, there's dozens or hundreds of films like this. You know, it's completely evolutionary and groundbreaking.
I wonder how long it took to film that too.
I read an article about it, and it took something like 35 days, but the script was like 5 times mm-hmm. the length of a normal script. And I read that there's literally a trillion variations of the film. There's 5 different endings, but a trillion different variations to get you there.
Really? Oh,
wow. Yeah.
No, that was, like you said, very genius and cool to see, you know, Black Mirror continuing as we wait for the new episodes and the new season in that show. So, yeah, like I said, there's so much more we could talk about, Hereditary and Terrifier. But let's move on to Halloween. What'd you guys think of the Halloween continuation?
I didn't see it.
Oh, I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Did you like the Rob Zombie one?
Oh, I love Rob Zombie.
I love Rob Zombie too, but I really didn't dig the Halloweens either. And I thought he was going to. I can't wait for the next Rob Zombie though, because it's connected to Devil's Rejects and House of 1,000 Corpses. So that one I'm looking forward to. We just totally jumped off the Halloween subject onto Rob Zombie, but I didn't see the new one. I didn't get to see it.
There was parts of this movie that were, I thought, pretty violent. There was this one scene in a gas station bathroom that went on, I think, pretty long. And I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
I thought that was, there was some, you know, questionable things, like Jamie Lee Curtis has her house on lockdown, but yet the front door is accessible. And you can get, I just didn't understand that. Everything else is on lockdown except for the front door.
the one that got me was, you know, they know how crazy Michael Myers is, and it's really well done. And like, he's insane, and he's just waiting to break free. And so they're going to transfer him. And how do they transfer him? I'll put him on the old prison bus with 18 other prisoners. And of course, he gets out and kills the bus driver, and the bus turns over, and there's 18 convicts in the middle of the road, including Michael Myers. It's like, did that happen in the first one? And wouldn't they have learned from that already to not do that with this guy?
I don't get that part either.
But Jamie Lee Curtis was awesome. It was pretty badass. And once again, it's a cool way to kind of reboot the franchise. I'm sure there'll be another sequel to the sequel that wasn't supposed to happen. So,
you know what? One movie that I saw that is a 2018 movie is this movie called The Green Book that I really loved. I don't know if you guys saw that movie.
I didn't see it. No, I heard about it. Didn't see it, though.
What's the concept?
Viggo Mortensen takes place in the 60s in New York. And
it was the director of Moonshine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even recognize Viggo Mortensen. He put on weight. He plays this kind of Italian tough guy. And then, do you know about this movie at all, Mike?
I don't actually. I just saw it, but I don't know anything about it.
I think you guys would love it. It takes place like he has to. He takes on this job to drive this pianist to down south and play down there. And this is going on around civil rights times. And it's pretty amazing how he turns from this racist guy into loving this artist. It's a pretty good movie.
The best movie I saw in terms of like well-made, like quality, it's probably, you know, going to sweep all the, you know, all the critics stuff is Roma, which is Alfonso Cuarón, who did Gravity and Children of Men. And this is his first film since Gravity. And it was a work of art. I mean, beautiful. It was just, it's black and white, very, very slow moving shots. He was the cinematographer on it, and it takes place in the 70s in Mexico. But it's, you know, it's probably the most beautiful film of the year, probably the best, like, critically acclaimed film of the year.
One last mention for horror fans. There's a movie that came out, I found it on Netflix. It's called Terrifier. And it's got this, the murderer is called Art the Clown. And if you guys like horror movies, it is creepy as. Have you seen that, Charlie? The guy's face, the clown.
My daughter seems to love this movie. but yeah, I think it's one of those things where it kind of took me back to another movie that I loved growing up. You know, and this kind of reminded me of it. So I was like, all right, I'm in it. You know,
what did it remind you of?
Vibe. I always go back to the Bette Davis character of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, because she looked like a clown to me. That always scared the hell out of me. And this movie kind of did that too.
Yeah. So if you guys like horror movies, one of the most vicious deaths I've ever seen in a horror movie as well. So, all right. Yeah. Let's go over to TV. Mike, what do you got? I know you're always into a lot of different things.
Well, I mean, I got a few. I mean, what can I start with? I'll start with The Handmaid's Tale, which I fell in love with this year. And I originally didn't, when I heard of it like a year or two ago when it first came out, I wasn't interested. It looked like it was going to be some sort of, you know, Quaker, you know, 1700, you know, history film that I wouldn't care about. But once I actually watched an episode or two, I realized it's in the future. It's very Clockwork Orange, very Children of Men, very dark. And I got completely hooked, and I binged both seasons like within a week or two. And it's just incredibly well made. And it's now actually in my top 10 of all time. That's how much I loved it.
Okay. I haven't
either. Guys watch it?
No, it's funny. I'm in Screen Actors Guild, so they always send me the four-year consideration DVDs. And I just got Handmaid's Tale the entire season. Not that we need DVDs anyways, but yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I've loved that show. The only thing I didn't love was how the last season ended.
How about Cobra Kai? Did you guys watch that?
Oh, I loved it.
I thought that was amazing. It was the kind of a continuation of the Karate Kid universe, but based more around the Karate Kid's kids. And it's really, really well written. And it was interesting, too, because it was on YouTube Red, which is another place now where they're making, you know, they're making a quality television that you had to buy, you know, pay $9.99 a month or whatever it is. It seems like network TV's falling more and more out of favor as we get, you know, the Netflix and the Hulus and the now YouTube making these great series.
Yeah, just keep regular TV for reality.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I thought Cobra Kai was really good, especially it was fun seeing those characters again. And, you know, the tension between Ralph Macchio and you know, Billy Zabka after all these years. It was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I did like this horror convention one year with Billy, and he was telling me that he's writing this episode, this series, and it's based on what you just said. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. And it's going to be on YouTube Red, and it's going to be really amazing. And sure enough, I saw it, and it was amazing. I really liked it. So yeah, all good.
I did Dancing with the Stars with Ralph Macchio. So I have his number, keep in touch with him. And he said that it took him a long time to agree to do it. I guess he did not want to go back to that character. And, you know, the typical artist that, you know, makes it huge as a character, but doesn't want to go back to it because he feels like it's, you know, betraying his artistic elements or whatever. It's like, just go back and do it, man. And
like Harrison Ford.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh God, Harrison Ford's got the Han Solo franchise and the Indiana Jones franchise. I mean, God, that's two of the biggest in the world.
I always name another actor who has two huge characters like that. Let me put it this way. Name an actor that has two characters that had franchises.
I'd say Sylvester Stallone with Rambo and Rocky.
That's the only one I can think of.
I was going to say Johnny Depp.
What's his other one? Pirates?
Pirates. What else?
You know, I was going to say Edward Scissorhands because it's such a cult type of thing, but he just has
the one-off.
But yeah,
that is true, because if you're talking about some of that, like my original way of debating it was, can people dress up as this person for Halloween and you would know who it is? So you would know Rambo and Rocky. You would know Solo and Indy, and you would know Edward and what's his face?
Captain the pirate. Jack
Sparrow. That's right. Yeah.
So Jack Sparrow.
That's not bad. I'll take that. Other shows that you liked, Mike?
I got so many, but I don't know. I have The Deuce. I have Escape at Dannemora. I have Haunting of Hill House. Which one of those you want to talk about? I love. There's so much good stuff this year.
Have you seen Haunting?
I love The Haunting of Hill House. I thought it was great.
Let's talk about it because I haven't watched it yet, but everyone's been talking about it. So what's the premise of the show?
Well, it's basically a house that was – it's a lot of flashbacks. It takes place in two different times. You have the whole cast as they were 25 years ago, I think in the early 90s. And then the other part of the show is in modern times showing all these kids grown up. So it's a lot of flashbacks. It's about a haunted house. So it's a lot of The Shining kind of stuff in it and, you know, possession and haunted house. But it was so incredibly well made. And especially, I think it was the sixth episode. Basically, there were these incredible long shots that were like about 15 minutes each, which must have been the hardest thing to stage. If you watch that episode, the entire episode is like three different shots with no cutaways. And it was just technically incredible. And I loved the whole show. I thought the whole series was great and scariest.
I thought the one thing that I admired about the show is the kids. So I think there was four or was it five kids all together?
Five kids, yeah.
Five. The way that they matched the child actors to the adults or vice versa was done so well. You know what I mean? Like when you see them as they're older, you're like, oh, well, that's that kid. You know what I mean?
Right. It's
done so well. And
at first I was wondering, like, why would they get – you have the kid from E.T., Henry Thomas, and then you had Timothy Hutton playing Timothy the older Hutton. Version. And at first I was like, well, why wouldn't they have the same actor and just do makeup? But when you get to the end of the show, you realize why they had two completely different actors, because there's some scenes, and not to give away spoilers, but there's some scenes where they're interacting together, and it was really, really cool.
That's a pretty pretty good call, though, Henry Thomas and Timothy Hutton. Timothy, I can see that.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you guys, anybody watch American Crime Story Versace?
Not me.
No, I missed that.
Gotcha. It's they did if you guys ever seen American Horror Story, the same guys do American Crime Story.
I love
Story.
The OJ one.
The OJ one. Well, this, OJ one if you liked OJ, you should check it out because the Versace one is really good, talking about the fashion designer. And what I didn't know, I mean, everyone knows Versace, right? But did you know he was murdered outside his house by a crazy ex-lover?
Yes. I didn't know it was an ex-lover.
That's basically the way that they spin it once again. But definitely something that you'll probably see a lot of in the award ceremonies and that sort of thing.
I saw it the other night. I think they won something.
They did. Yeah, they did.
I saw like Ricky Martin was on stage, and I'm like, oh yeah, he was in that movie.
Yeah, he played one of the.
You know what show that I just loved? Like, I couldn't wait for it to come on. It was a show called Barry. It's on HBO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh,
I did.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Bill Hader is so awesome in this show, dude.
Great.
And Henry Winkler is killer.
Yeah.
Really?
He's awesome.
He's in it. Is it a comedy?
Comedy dark. On HBO, it swept a lot of awards, actually.
Yeah.
It did really well.
It's a dark comedy, and it's just awesome. I mean, you'll blow right through it, but it just gets better. Every episode gets better and better.
The other Bill Hader show I love is Documentary Now. I don't know if you watched that with Fred Armisen and him. It's brilliant. He is awesome.
It's good.
He's just awesome.
Yeah, and Henry Winkler, man, that guy's such a national treasure. Like, everything that he does is so hilarious, you know.
Even but talking about, like, going back to an old, you know, like you're talking about Ralph Macchio, Karate Kid, you know, Henry Winkler is one of those people, like, with a show like Barry, he completely reinvented himself. It's not like you're watching this and it's like, oh, that's the Fonz.
Right.
I mean, he completely reinvented himself at, you know, age whatever he is, 70 or whatever, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, if you and actually, too, I was just going to mention him in Arrested Development. And there was more Arrested Developments this year, which were all great as well. If you guys were ever into that show, such a genius show.
I'm a huge fan of the show, but I haven't caught up with the latest season, actually.
It's as ridiculous as always. You know, it's definitely worth watching. It's one of those ones where you think, oh, Arrested Development, then you actually get into that universe again. And, you know, that's the brilliance of Netflix. They do something, they put it out, and it's there forever with all the episodes ready to go. You could knock that out in, you know, a long tour bus ride from Spain to freaking Greece if you're ever doing that one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Well, that's where I watch all my movies and TV shows are usually at night on tour. You know, people wonder, like, how do I watch all this shit? But as all three of us know, when you're on tour, you have 22 hours to kill every day. And
that's right.
You know, half the time and just watching TV shows and binging.
Did you guys?
It's hard for me to do that, man. It's like I'll be in my bunk trying to do it, and then someone comes, opens my curtain. What's going on? What are you doing? Dude, I'm trying to watch season two of the Ozarks. Leave me alone for a bit.
It's so hard, though, because then, you know, like my TV and movie consumption has gone down. My reading has gone right out the window because all you do is just sit there and fuck around on your phone. Which just drives me crazy, the amount of time you waste just doing that.
Right. Totally.
Okay, so before we continue on with some of our favorite TV shows of the year, and there's so many, O'Reilly Auto Parts is helping you and your family stay safe. I know Mike and Charlie feel that way. Because when it comes to safety, there's nothing more important than your vehicle's brakes, okay? Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the brakes that are an exact fit for your vehicle. Brands that you trust, like Brake Best, Brake Best Select. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the brake parts and accessories you need at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Go check out O'Reilly Auto Parts and go do it now. Did you guys hear about the show called Murder Mountain?
No.
Okay, so it's...
Well, Chris, you're coming out with all the obscure shit, man.
Yeah, what's going on here?
I'm trying to match up with you. Just, I'll give it a quick rundown. It's a real show. It's like a documentary show on Netflix, and it's about this area in Northern California where everybody's a weed farmer, but there's no laws because everything's gone so far out of whack that the cops won't even go to this mountain. There's vigilante justice. There's like 230 missing people in this county because of all these, you know, guys owe people money and just kill them rather than pay them. And the cops just figure, ah, it's just two drug dealers killing each other. Why do we even want to get involved? It's really interesting just to see that something like that could exist. It's like the Wild West in 2018 in Northern California.
Mm.
So, oh, wow. What's it called?
It's called Murder Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. What about Mayans, Mike? Did you watch that, the sequel to Sons of Anarchy?
I haven't seen a lot of these shows. I've been stockpiling them because I prefer to binge them. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm like catching up on all these shows. I stockpiled Mayans. I'm waiting to start that. I stockpiled Ray Donovan. I'm blowing through that right now. Narcos Mexico. But so you tell me, what about Mayans? Was it good? You disappointed? You like it?
It's not disappointing, but it really is. It's worth checking out. Like I said, it's still Kurt Sutter. He writes like he writes, which is very, you know, in your face, just, you know, crazy violence, a lot of sex. But it really is about six or seven episodes in, I realized this is basically Sons of Anarchy, but a Mexican version. Like you can you can pair.
Well, that's not bad. If we don't have Sons of Anarchy anymore, it sounds.
And that's what I'm saying. Like you go, okay, this guy's the Jax of the show. This guy's the, you know, the. I can't remember any of the other guys' names of whoever else was on there, but each guy kind of could be paired with somebody right. else, you know. This is the TIG of the show.
Right.
But definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do it. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Anything else you guys saw on TV you want to talk about that stood out for you?
Well, I threw out The Deuce and Escape of Dannemora. I'm curious if either of you guys watched
either
of those.
You mentioned the Escape show the other day because you said, who's in it? There's somebody... Funny.
It's Benicio del Toro and Paul Dano and Patricia Arquette. The whole series is directed by Ben Stiller.
That's right.
It's on Showtime, and it was phenomenal. I binged the whole thing like in one night, and it was so good.
I have to check it out.
It's an escape, you know, a prison escape story, but really well done. And the acting is incredible. And it's true. It's a true story. It's these two guys that escaped in 2015 and with the help of one of the women that worked at the prison, they were both having sex with her and they used her to help with the escape. And it's a true story. So it's really amazing.
The only thing that I'll point out, if you guys are Evil Dead fans, which I would assume at least you are, Charlie. Ash versus Evil Dead on Stars. Did you watch that at all? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen like anything recently. I saw like the first few.
Did you like them?
I will say that I wanted to like them more than I did. Yeah. I know some of my friends like rave about it, but for some reason it just didn't hit me, you know?
It's definitely got the same vibe as Evil Dead, and it's fun. Over the top violence and gore. I feel the same as you. I watched the first season. I enjoyed it, but there's only so much Ash that you can take. But if you guys like Evil Dead and you've been waiting for the long, you know, long beleaguered sequel, you might want to go check it out because it's definitely in the same vibe and it's a lot of fun. It just is, you know, a little Ash goes a long way, shall we say?
honestly, the thing that I've been watching a lot of lately is kind of like politically driven shows. Like there's this show on Showtime called The Circus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watch that too.
I love it. It's like, wow, I'm so interested in this now, and
it's a crazy time to be into politics. I mean, I never, ever, ever followed politics until these last 2 years, and now I can't turn away. It's the greatest reality show ever made. Not only in any way, but you can't turn away. It's like a car crash.
Well, that's the thing. Like, go ahead, Charlie.
No, I was going to say it's a reality show, but it's really reality because we're all part of it, and I wish I could kind of binge watch it and know how it ends. And, you know,
don't we all?
My anxiety level would probably be.
Oh, my son came up to me today and yesterday and he's like, hey, Dad, you know, Trump's paying people $80 an hour to build the wall. And I'm like, oh, it just never ends. And like him or hate him, he's just always doing stuff. That's just like, oh, my gosh. Come on, dude. You know?
Yeah. Believe me, I'm not really affiliated with any party. Yeah. I'm just kind of like being real, you know,
being a human being.
And if I see that thing is blue, then of course I'm going to say it's blue.
Right.
You know? Wait, that was kind of weird that I said blue.
Yeah. Purple.
It's purple. I meant purple. But anyway,
but you're right.
I do wish we lived in a world where you can openly say what you really want to say about this shit without losing half your fan base.
times 1,000. It's like I don't even know what to say anymore. You know, I went to the mid like in Canada, and this is how crazy it's getting. So when you grow up, you play hockey. And when you're a kid, like if you're like a little kid, like 8 years old or something, your league is called the Midget League. Now my son's playing midget. You can't call it the Midget League anymore because the word midget isn't allowed to be used. So they had to change it to like, you know, the little kids league or whatever the hell it is.
Today, I made a post on Instagram because it was Jimmy Page's birthday and Dave Matthews. And I said, happy birthday to these two guys. And someone made a comment saying, I cannot support anyone who sleeps with underage girls.
Well, who would that be?
Jimmy Page.
Oh. his teenage girlfriend back in the 70s.
Gotcha. Right.
Lori Maddox. And I was like, really?
Is that where we're going?
It's crazy that we're living in a time that everything is so politically correct. When you look at what's going on in the White House, it's more politically incorrect than ever.
Yeah.
It's like the rest of the society is undergone, but what's going on in the White House is excusable. It's the most backwards thing I've ever seen in ever.
I did a cruise this year. I told you guys about it. And one of the things about it at first when I was dealing with Six Man was they were wondering if it would be like a male dominated demographic. And it turned out there was about 35% women signed up. And I just wanted people to know that. So there's 35% women on this cruise. That's a lot of bikinis. And you would have thought I held up Mother Teresa and like, you know, blowtorched her in the knees. Like, what, bikinis? What are you doing? And you know who defended it was girls. So they're like, what else are we supposed to wear? Burlap sacks? Like, yes, we're going to wear bikinis. I didn't say anything else other than that. But there's people that are trying to bring you down because of it. Like you said, it's getting harder and harder to say anything in this day.
You just kind of like objectified blowtorches.
your prejudice against blowtorch torture, Jericho.
God damn it, Chris.
Let's move over to music. I know you're gonna have some obscure ones. You busted me on obscure, Mike. Tell me what you got.
I don't think you guys are gonna know anything on my list. I mean, I'll try to go more. I mean, because I have typical prog shit. I got, you know, bands like We Came From Space and Haken and Dilemma and Sea Within. That's all like the prog shit. But I guess more mainstream, I love the new Eminem album. I haven't been a hip hop fan in many, many years. I loved hip hop in the 90s, Public Enemy, NWA, Tribe Called Quest, Beastie Boys. Loved a lot of stuff, but I kind of fell off the last 10 years or so. I was never even a big Eminem fan, but this latest album caught my ear, and I think it was the whole diss track thing that started with him and Machine Gun Kelly kind of drew me back in,
and then I ended up
loving this album.
Yeah, those diss tracks between those two were, especially Eminem's, man, that was great stuff.
Yeah, man, it's hard to go up against that dude, you know, with something like that, but yeah, it was pretty intense.
Let's go to some stuff.
I also like that. There's a hardcore band called Vein, V-E-I-N, as opposed to V-A-I-N. But they're a hardcore band, and they have an album called Error Zone, which is probably my favorite album of the year. It's more in the vein of like Code Orange and stuff like that. I mean, I'm at the point now where my son, Max, who's 19, he's turning me on to music. You know, that's kind of like where we're at this point. It's no longer like I'll play him. Half the stuff I play him, he calls it dad metal. You know, to him, Metallica is like listening to Elvis Presley or something. So he's listening to like all this crazy hardcore shit, and he's turning me on to a lot of it. And a lot of it is really cool. And this band Vane put out it's like a 28-minute album, and it runs from start to finish like one song. It's, you know, it's kind of like Rain and Blood in that respect. It's like 28 minutes of just straight brutality from start to finish. It just never lets up, and this album just totally does it for me.
I love what you said about Metallica being being Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the bands. I mean, we all have been in and out of love with Ghost at different times. What do we think about the new Ghost record that came out this year?
Charlie.
Everyone wants to tour with them, so no one's
saying. You know, the way I feel about the band, I love that band. And I love Tobias. I still hold their first album so high up because it was amazing when I first heard that record. And I know they're very popular now, but I didn't love the new record as much as I love the first two. You know, I just, those first two albums are just awesome to me. But I'm very happy with their success. I'm, you know, glad to see that.
You know,
yeah, I mean, they're blown up. It's crazy.
It's amazing how big they are. I mean, playing the Forum on their own, you know, and selling it out. And to me, like, I was never really, I'm still, you know, you guys know me, man. I'm still stuck in this time. Not stuck, but I didn't like Venom. I didn't like Slayer back in the day because I didn't like the whole satanic thing. It just never appealed to me. I didn't like, you know, Merciful Fate. I like them now. But the whole kind of the satanic thing with Ghost, I didn't, you know, whatever. But listening to it, actually, when Charlie and I did one of their videos this year for the song Danse Macabre, where they Brian Slagle from Metal Blade said, if we send you a pair of JBL headphones, will you, you know, lip sync this Ghost song for 30 seconds? And I was like, dude, I'll do it without the JBL headphones. Like, whatever you need, I'll help you out. What I didn't know was he was doing that for everybody else. So the video is just a bunch of musicians singing the song. Right. And it's, I didn't know that Charlie did it and Shadows did it. Kirk Hammett did it. And it's actually kind of an interesting way to do a video. But I had no idea that you were doing that, Charlie, until I saw it.
Yeah, that was the first show on the Slayer tour. And they came down and I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I actually like that song.
It's a good song. Yeah.
I thought it was good.
I think Ghost ripped off Max's band Next to None because you guys both did the same exact thing for the Max Cookie video 5 years ago.
That's right.
Both of you were in that video.
Great call.
Dude, yeah. That's right.
Ghost.
You can't find that video online anymore. Max had it taken down. He's so embarrassed because he's, you know, he's a kid. He's like 14 years old.
Really?
13. Oh, yeah. So, you know, he's a whole different kid now. So he's a man now, so he had
sure.
that video taken down. He's too embarrassed by it. He doesn't want anybody to Google his name, and that comes up.
Well, yeah, you get to see Charlie and Chris. Imagine how we feel. How about Greta Van Fleet? I know we're all big fans of the original EP. This album came out as a little bit of a grower for me. It took a while.
I like the EPs better. I don't know. I think I like them better when they were Our Little Secret. You know, now they're, you know, they're going to be on Saturday Night Live this weekend, and it's like, wow. And, you know, like Ghost, they're the next big thing. So it kind of took away some of the appeal for me.
I agree with Mike.
It's pretty good for
me. I mean, you don't want to base a band, liking a band or not based on their popularity. You know, it's like we all still loved the Beatles or Zeppelin or Queen or even Metallica or Guns N' Roses when they blew up. But in this case, I don't know. I thought like when they first came around, it was kind of like Our Little Secret. And now it's like, I don't know.
It's good for rock and roll, though, whenever, like you said.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
The mainstream, absolutely. You know, playing these big rooms, and it just keeps going. Because I always laugh when people bag on them for the Zeppelin comparison. Oh, they sound like Zeppelin. Well, first of all, you try and sound like Zeppelin and see how easy it is. And second of all, their fan base are early 20s. You know, they don't know necessarily who Led Zeppelin is. Whatever, man. If this becomes this generation's version of Led Zeppelin that has some similarities to that band, I mean, as long as it keeps kids playing guitar and going to the rock show and not just sitting there with a computer pad, you know, watching YouTube or programming.
You know, you just made a point of saying, like, these kids are in their 20s. They don't know blah, blah, blah. And whenever someone says that, I always think back to when I was a kid, and it's like, I knew who Elvis was.
Yeah,
I knew who Chuck Berry was. I knew, you know, what predates, you know, the bands that I was into.
Before us, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I always say, are you idiots that you don't know who Led Zeppelin are? You know what I mean? Or Aerosmith? It's, you know, and going back to Greta Van Fleet for 1 second, that first EP that came out was such a breath of fresh air. I must have played that thing a thousand times the first week I heard it, because I was just like, I love this fucking song. I love that song. I turned all my friends onto it. It was great. We saw them at this barbecue roast here in Chicago. It was like great, you know, and I'm happy to see their success, you know, and I hope their next album is more like that first EP and just has that thing that makes you look, you know, you look over to your friend, you're like, yeah, that's it, you know.
I found this one was a little bit.
There's very few bands these days that have the potential to be like a classic band. So, I mean, I guess it's, I'd rather see them doing it. And, you know, them, they're going to be the first rock band on Saturday Night Live, in the last year and a half at this point. So at least we have that. And it's only good for rock.
It's encouraging, man.
Yeah.
And they're so young. And, you know, I hope we see a spike in instruments and kids just like, oh, I want to be like them, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
So let's hope that happens. So we need to start praising them more.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention musically at all?
I love the last Dave Matthews record. I know.
That's your guy.
I love Dave Matthews, man. He makes this music that sometimes it makes me really emotional. Like I almost like shed a tear. He just hits me in certain ways. That whole band as a whole, they're just so good. And to this day, they're so good, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Carter's such an amazing drummer, man. Yeah, I love listening to him.
He is. He never stops getting better, you know?
Yeah.
I have to mention, on behalf of merch guy Ray, the new Halloween song with the reunited Halloween, seven guys in the band, Pumpkins
United.
They
put out a new song?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
It's called Pumpkins United.
Wow.
Yeah, worth checking out. With Michael Kiske and Andy Daris and Kai Hansen. All three of them sing on it. So it's
worth
checking out if you're a power metal fan.
Have you guys heard the... Oh, you go, Chris. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Have I heard what?
I was going to say the new Roger Manning Jr. EP. He's Roger from Jellyfish. And I know Charlie's a fan.
Yeah.
I don't know if you are, Chris. But I love this new EP. Even though you listen to it, and it's like, okay, well, that's his Elton John song. And that's his Fleetwood Mac song, you know. But that's what I loved about Jellyfish, you know. So it's great to be hearing him again and getting some new music from him again. It's one of my favorites of the year.
Okay, so 2018 was also the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' White Album. All three of us Beatles fanatics. Hey, we're called the Fab Three after all, right? It's no coincidence. We're going to talk about that coming up in a minute. But first, I got to tell you what Diamond Dallas Page is doing this year. It's unbelievable, okay? I personally talked to Page. He explained what's going on. And what he's doing is he's giving you a shot to win $1 million in his Positively Unstoppable Challenge. The only thing you got to do for your chance at one of the prizes worth up to $1 million is own your life. That's it. Dallas is even getting you all the tools you need to do it thanks to his DDPY program and the DDPY Now app. DDP Yoga's Positively Unstoppable Challenge aims to give you that extra push you need to get off the couch and change your life. Registration open now at positivelyunstoppable.com. And remember, you got till January 31st to get registered, and then you have 16 weeks to transform your life into something meaningful for a chance to meet Diamond Dallas Page in person and choose from a number of a different mystery prizes worth up to $1 million. Okay, you could actually get $1 million from this. Yeah, he's got the insurance for it and everything. The challenge is inspired by DDP's new book, Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. And at the end of the 16-week challenge period, you'll submit photos, videos, and an essay detailing your transformation. Two finalists chosen and invited to the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. That's where we filmed the Judas video. And you're going to meet DDP in person, take part in a live stream event where they choose the prize. So get registered. You can do that for free at positivelyunstoppable.com. But you have to register by January 31st. And if you're thinking about it, or if you're on the fence, let me just say this again, okay? Let me just make this perfectly clear. If you register by January 31st, you have a chance to win $1 million. This is no gimmick. It's $1 million. You understand me? Seven figures. Go to positivelyunstoppable.com. And if you're looking for wisdom and the motivation to crush this challenge, then order DDP's new book, Positively Unstoppable, today. The book is filled with lessons from DDP's life. It's going to help you follow your own dreams and take action to reach your goals. Available wherever books are sold. So register for the challenge and your shot at $1 million prize at positivelyunstoppable.com and get a copy of DDP's book to help you transform and own your life. But remember, you have to register for the challenge by January 31st at positivelyunstoppable.com. Go check out the book, Positively Unstoppable, today. It's on sale now. And then register at positivelyunstoppable.com. That's P-O-S-I-T-I-V-E-L-Y, positivelyunstoppable.com. Register before January 31st and get a chance to win $1 million. Do it. We can do a whole show on this, but we'll just mention it briefly because it was awesome. The White Album reissue, the 50th anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a whole show. That was amazing. And I guess we talked last year about the Sgt. Pepper 50th, but it was amazing, the White Album package. Just I love the outtakes. I know a lot of people really like the acoustic demos, but us hardcore fans have had bootlegs of that for 40 years now. So to me, it was the session outtakes that was, you know, unheard and brand new. And that stuff blew my mind.
You know what one of my favorite outtakes is the Goodnight one when all the Beatles sing.
Yeah.
On it.
And it was a completely different approach. Like when the song first started, it was a completely different song. There's some stuff on these outtakes that are just mind-blowing.
How crazy is it that Paul had Let It Be?
Right.
In 67.
Well, it was 68, technically.
Well, didn't he write it when they went to India?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on there that came out years later. I mean, obviously all the solo John, George, and Paul stuff. But yeah, the fact that there's a version of Let It Be and stuff, you know, from the White Album sessions is crazy. Right. But the other thing is, it's not that far removed from the Get Back sessions. That's how they were working so quickly that, you know, here they did the White Album in the summer in 68, comes out in the November 68. And then a few months later, you know, they get together and start the Get Back sessions and do the rooftop concert. That was January 69. So that was really only a few months removed from the White Album.
Do you guys feel like it's the anti-Pepper album?
I think so, for sure. I think it was the most, it was stripped. Sgt. Pepper was psychedelic and deep and all these levels and layers, whereas the White Album was just stripping it down to just, you know, as bare as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, the cover too. I mean, it's just white.
The polar opposite.
It's the bridge between, you know, when they were stripping down for Get Back from Pepper. That's kind of, because there are songs on that have the psychedelic trip to them. But when you're talking about, first of all, we're talking about the outtakes. I love the I Won't outtake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that.
Where he sings, if you want me to, I won't. And then Lennon goes, yes, you will.
Yeah.
but Sour Milk Sea, dude. I don't know how, as a Beatles fanatic for 37 years, I knew the title because, you know, I read all the books and all that stuff. Never actually heard the song. And, dude, that song is crazy good. I can't believe they never released that.
Was always one of my favorites that they never did.
I can't.
The three of us shared the files around to each other, the electric version, because they recorded a version of that song during the White Album sessions with Ringo, Paul, George, Eric Clapton on guitar, and Nicky Hopkins on keyboards, I believe. And anyway, but there's an electric version of that, and it wasn't included on the White Album box, which was strange, because the only version on the White Album box is George's acoustic demo of it. But there is an electric version from those sessions. I mean, the drums sound like it's directly out of Savoy Truffle, and they ended up giving that song away to Jackie Lomax when he signed to Apple Records. But it's strange that there's no version of that on this box set. But
if you go on Spotify, it's on Spotify, because the
is that right?
Yeah, the one that I've been listening to is the one with the same tracks, because the Jackie Lomax one is the exact tracks just with Jackie's vocal, but it's still Paul and Ringo playing on it and everything. But, you know, if you look at, I can understand maybe it didn't make the White Album session, but if you look at the albums afterwards, like, you know, One Brown Shoe is on Let It Be instead of Sour Milk Sea, you know?
Right. Not guilty, too, right?
Yeah, not guilty. They did 102 takes of and didn't even use it.
Did you know when Giles Martin was talking about it, he's like, it's mind-boggling that they did 102 takes of that song, but they only did like one or two takes of Paperback Writer back then.
Right.
How the hell is that?
Was that the whole band doing the takes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Not Guilty, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, like I said, man, the fact that Paul and, you know, the Beatles in general had all that stuff in their vaults for so many years, it's great that, you know, for guys like us, and, you know, like I said, like Sour Milk Sea to me was a new Beatles song that I got to hear, you know, in 2018. So that's enough to last for a little while, hopefully, until they do, you know, whatever, Abbey Road next year, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, fingers crossed for Abbey Road this year and Let It Be next year. And as you guys know, like when I met Paul a few years ago, That was the question I asked him, because before I met him, I said to myself, what do I really want to know from him that that I've always wondered. And in the middle of our conversation, I asked him, you know, what's going on with Let It Be? Is that ever going to see the light of day? You know, we have bootlegs of it, but it's never been released on DVD or Blu-ray. And he kind of winked at me and said, you know, it's in the works, and kind of alluded that it's going to be coming out soon. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're planning on continuing the 50th anniversary thing through next year with a Let It Be box as well.
I hope they continue, and I hope Abbey Road is done really well, just like they did this one. My only complaint about this box is that they didn't include Lady Madonna, Hey Jude, and Revolution in this. Like, why wouldn't they put that on here? Those are the
singles. Well, they had them on the outtakes, but they didn't have new mixes for the album.
Right. I want the remixes of those songs. Right.
Yeah.
The remixes were really close to the originals, too. They even did the fades in the same spots and everything, whereas the Sgt. Pepper remixes, to me, were very different. But these remixes just made everything sound bigger and clearer, but they stayed very original. They stuck to the original mixes and the fades and all that.
He said, I read this very thing faithful. about Giles Martin saying that they mixed that whole record, but it sounded too modern for them. And what they did is they got all the original gear that they originally mixed it on and did it that way to keep it sounding like, okay, this came from 1968, but here's the new mix of it.
But it's weird because they really matched everything. Like, I wondered at the end of Helter Skelter if they would let it go longer, but they faded it out at the same exact spot, faded it back in at the same exact spot. All the segues, because all the songs on the White Album segue into each other, and you have these little quirky things in between, and they kept all of that completely intact.
It's crazy. Did you guys also know that those demos, they didn't even have those there? It came from George Harrison's wife, Olivia.
Wow. That's crazy, man.
Those are all George did all that stuff. He recorded those demos at his place.
Yeah, exactly. That was Escher, I think that was the name of his house, I think.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
we
could do a whole show on that. But let's wind down here as we talk about some of the people that passed away in 2018. Penny Marshall, George Bush, Barbara Bush, obviously Stan Lee. I know you met him a couple times, Charlie.
Yeah, Stan Lee was awesome. When I met him, he was like this, like talking to Grandpa, but he knew everything. You know what I mean? He was so up on everything. And it's like, man, you know, Stan Lee is so responsible for a lot of our childhood without us even realizing it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing about him. You know, it's funny because I've done a couple comic book shows on Talk is Jericho. And Stan was kind of the figurehead, but there was a lot of other people that kind of worked with Stan to create these characters that kind of fell by the wayside over the years. And Stan kind of became the guy that was the ipso facto, you know, creator of all these things. But to see him pass away, it was kind of a drag for sure.
Yeah.
And then we had Scott Wilson, Herschel from Walking Dead. Of course, Burt Reynolds, the classic. I went back and watched Cannonball Run after he died and just had a laugh how ridiculous those two guys were, him and Dom DeLuise.
Jack Horner. He's Jack Horner to me.
Oh, from
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
You know, it's funny to hear about Burt Reynolds because Burt Reynolds was such a movie star, you know, back in the 70s, man. That dude just like, that's a movie star right there, Burt Reynolds, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. Can we say that? Can we say that nowadays? Like, yeah, he's a movie star.
Old school movie star. They just had all these.
Well, there was a great movie that one of his, I think it probably was his last film, that was basically his life story. I can't remember the name. Oh, it's called the Last Movie Star. I think that was the name of the film. And it was fascinating because he's playing himself. And there's even scenes in the movie with him interacting with him from Deliverance and him from Smoking the Bandit. It's really fascinating that he made this, I guess, knowing that he wasn't going to be around much longer. And this movie is pretty much his autobiography, but it's a real Hollywood movie with him playing himself. He's not named Burt Reynolds, but he's got a different name, but it's pretty much him.
Yeah, I remember mentioning that. Of course, Vern Troyer, Robin Leach, and then, of course, our bro Vinnie Paul passing away too, which is a huge blow for all of us as musicians and as friends. Charlie and I did a show about him with Chris from Lamb of God, but still hard to believe that he's gone in this, in January here.
You know, it's something that I was talking to Rita the other day. She's like, y'all got to come and do my dime bash, you know, at NAMM. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do it. No, you're doing it. And it's like, we started chatting about it, and it's like, it just brings me back when I'm around her. It just brings me back to all those great times. So I said, I'll go and do it, because I don't know, man, it just playing those songs just reminds me of that time and those guys, you know?
Yeah. It was weird because every December 8th, I email Vinny and say, you know, hey man, every December 8th, I talk to my dad cause it's his birthday, and I text Vinny to let him know I'm thinking about him. Cause that's the day that Daryl, of course, was killed. And this year I actually picked up my phone to text him, and I was like, oh man, he's not around. It was kind of a drag on that too. So, good brother that we'll always miss for sure.
Absolutely.
So we're here.
I don't know about you guys, but I don't delete.
Yeah.
When friends pass, they're still on my phone. I still have Vinny on my phone. I still have, you know, the Rev or, you know, AJ Piro. I mean, these, I can't delete their contacts once they're gone. So, they'll always be in the phone.
Yeah, exactly, no. Man. I agree. So that's
you
it.
You know, one more person that I'd like to just say, you know, growing up, I always thought of like Roy Clark as one of these guys who is such an awesome guitar player. When I heard he passed away, I was just like, oh man, Roy Clark, you know? I don't know if you guys were like,
of course,
ever watch shows like Hee Haw. Yeah.
One of those insane chicken picker guitar players that just blows your mind, you know?
Dude, sick. Just sick. And it was sad to hear he passed away.
I want to mention the other Clark we lost this year, Fast Eddie Clark.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Shocking, because he, you know, that was the last of the classic Motorhead lineup. All three of them are gone now. And Wurzel as well makes four. But if you look at the classic lineup, Lemmy, Phil, and Fast Eddie Clark, it's shocking. There, I think Motorhead and the Ramones are the only bands I could think of where the full lineup is now gone at this point. Oh, and the Jimi Hendrix Experience as well. So, but it's sad that. Well, we're getting at that point in life now.
Yeah.
Do you consider the first four Ramones?
Yeah. The first three albums. Tommy's gone. So Tommy, Joey, Dee Dee, and Johnny. Yeah. That's the first three albums, and all four of them are gone.
Marky's the only one left.
And one other guy I want to mention is another guitar player. This guy, Ed King, who is with, of course, Skynyrd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably one of my. I tried to play that lead in Sweet Home Alabama. That was like. Just his technique and his tone, and he wrote some of the best stuff in that band too.
Yeah, man. Like,
I'll say this though, and this is going to come across the wrong way, but it wasn't as bad of a year as 2016 and 2017. It's a horrible thing to say, and I come across wrong, but like I remember doing a list for 2016 and 2017, and it was brutal. So. At least this year was slowed down a bit, but I mean, you know, like Vinnie Paul, I mean, that's just for us devastating. And Pat Torpy, who was a friend, and there's a lot, you know, when it's at the point where you're losing friends, that's crazy. You know, it's just sad how time marches on like this.
Well, yeah, especially friends that shouldn't have gone when they did, you know what I mean? So now here we are at 2019. What do you got coming up, Charlie? And what do you have coming up, Mike?
Well, it's going to be a crazy year of juggling. I just finished working on a Flying Colors album, which will come out later this year. Derek and Bumblefoot are waiting for me in the basement to continue work on the new Sons of Apollo album. We have the live thing coming out that we did with the covers and the orchestra. In about 2 weeks, I got the new Neil Morse Band album coming out, which is another double concept album, a continuation of the last double concept album. And I'm going to be touring with those guys pretty much for the first part of this year. And then the Winery Dogs are going to do a U.S. run in May. So, yeah, I mean, that's like, I think, five bands right there. So it's pretty nutty.
A typical Portnoy schedule for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Charlie?
That's awesome. Well, I have like a bunch of demos for this next record, and I'm getting together with Scott and the nephew in L.A. in about 2 weeks to – start putting it together. And it's so far everything that I have is just really aggressive. I don't know if it's because of the state that we're all in, but it's coming out very angry, and I don't know. You know, so I'm looking forward
working with Jay again.
Yep.
Yeah. Jay Rustin's awesome, man. Very, very.
He's like our fifth, sixth member at this point. And then we're going to go out and do a bunch of shows. So March, we go to Australia, Japan, and New Zealand, and then we hit the Europeans. And so we're going to be peeing on the Europeans.
All right, guys. Well, 2018.
And what about you, Chris? What are you doing this year?
Yeah, whoa. What's going on? I know you just did something.
Yeah, I actually just signed with a new wrestling company called All Elite Wrestling that's owned by a billionaire who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Fulham Football Club in London. So that was kind of a big deal. And basically just kind of taking it easy. We're starting to write the new Fozzy record. And, of course, we also have the supporting Iron Maiden at the stadium in Los Angeles in September, which is blowing my mind as well. And that's
I want to try and go to that. I think I'm going to fly out for that.
Dude, that's going to be so crazy. I mean, you guys have opened for Iron Maiden. I never have. And doing it in, you know, the Bank of California soccer stadium, it's pretty much one of those things where it's, you know, bucket list, dream come true, surreal, all of the
above.
So
yeah, it's so awesome.
We have one gig booked for this year, and that's it. So that's not a bad place to start.
I would say get up there and play your set and then end with a Blaze Bailey song.
That's what he said. If you wanted to ruin your career, just open with like Aces High and just play all Maiden songs and see how long it goes before Smallwood pulls the plug. All right, guys, go back to writing your stuff. And we got more podcasts coming up later in a month or two. And it's always a pleasure to hang out with the Fab Three here on Talk Woo-hoo! Is Jericho. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, man. All right.
Thanks,
take care, guys.
Thanks, guys. Right. Bye.
A very big thank you to everybody for coming along here today and making it. Well, you know, you made the show anyway. Wonderful audience.
All right. Thanks to Charlie and Mike for doing the 2018 year in review, the Fab Three. Like I said, our next podcast, we're going to do the ultimate Beatles set list. If the Beatles were still around today and reunited, what might their set list be? We're going to track that in a couple weeks. But in the meantime and in between time, we definitely got some good TV, movie, and music suggestions to check out from Mike and Charlie, and lots to look forward to in 2019 with their respective bands, Anthrax, Wandry Dogs, Neil Morris Band, Sons of Apollo. So much cool stuff going on. And speaking of cool stuff, coming up on Wednesday, I'm going to LA this week to film a new movie with Team Tiger Awesome. And it's only apropos that they return to Talk Is Jericho for another fun-filled watch-along. This time, it's one of my favorite cheap-ass horror movies ever, Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers, one of the greatest movies of all time. If you haven't seen it, go watch it now. I think it's on YouTube. You can't really find it too anywhere else, but it's one of the best 80s slasher TNA movies you're ever going to see. And Team Tiger Awesome is going to be here to do a watch along just like we did with Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. It's a lot of fun. We're going to check that out on Wednesday. So you're going to love it. It's funny. It's cheesy. It's ridiculous. Come join the hilarity and watch along with us. You might want to watch it first. Like I said, Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers. Go find it where you can find it and come here on Wednesday to watch along with us. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Please have a safe weekend. Don't drive drunk. Have a great 2019. Hopefully it's even better than 2018 was. And remember, IHateStevenSinger.com. See you on Wednesday.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.